Okay. So summarizing, two-thirds of the way through the first chapter, what's been said so far, very simply, knowledge of Brahman, the absolute truth, is the means of becoming liberated from material entanglement and suffering. That knowledge is explained specifically what that knowledge is. It should be, one should understand that absolute truth in his three aspects in this world as the living entity, nature, and the controller of both. The method is described, how to develop that knowledge. One should, three stages. First is one of turning one's attention toward him through theoretical understanding. The second is intense meditation, or we can understand it in the process of bhakti yoga as practical service. And third is direct realization, what's called tattva bhava in the verse. Then the success, the perfection of that practice is described. That one's material bondage is completely dissolved, one's freed from all bondage, and one regains his spiritual identity in relationship with the Supreme. So basically that's a description of the sadhana, of knowledge, that's systematically explained in the Vedanta Sutra, in terms of sambandha, abhideha, and prayojana. Knowledge of what? Sambandha means knowledge of the relationship between the Supreme and his energies, including the living entity. Abhideha is knowledge of the practice of how to become self-realized, how to realize practically this relationship. And third is prayojana, the final goal, the perfection that can be achieved by this process. And that's what's been described in this first chapter of the Śrīta-ashvatthāra Upanishad. Okay, so we'll continue with verse 12. If anybody can see in the dark.
Etad gyeyam nityam evatma saṃstam nātak param veditavyam hi kinshit bhokta bhogyam peditaram ca matvā sarvam phoktam trividam brahmam etat.
This is the eternal object of knowledge, situated within each individual soul. There is nothing more to be, nothing more than this to be known. If one simply understands the three aspects of reality as the enjoyer, the enjoyed, and the controller of both, that person will realize himself to be pure spirit. Such is the sum and substance of all that needs to be said. Okay, so one thing that's being introduced new in this verse is the fact that this absolute truth is also the super soul in everybody's heart. He's not only the controller of the whole universe, all-pervading, the cause and origin of everything, but he's also personally present in every living person's heart. Atma samstam. One should, according to Ranga Ramanuja, one should develop realization of this super soul, the controller of one's own heart, because by that one becomes optikama, one fulfills all his own desires. And it's stated here. Of course, it's reiterated, repeated it, was said before, that one should understand Brahman in these three aspects, bhokta, bhogyam pretasara, the enjoyer, which is the living entity, the enjoyed, which is material nature, and the prerita, the impeller, or the one who gives life and energy and intelligence to the living entity, and gives the potency to Maya, to delude the living entity, the Supreme Lord Himself, wants you to know all three. Sarvam Proktam Trivadam Brahmaneta. This is three aspects of the Absolute Truth. And knowing this, that's all you need to know. And saying this, there really isn't anything more to be said. Of course, this is the beginning of the Upanishad, and it continues for another five chapters. But it's actually summing up. It's saying that this is it. This is everything that needs to be said. And whatever else we say after this is just elaboration. Okay, Atma Samstam, we're translating as meaning situated in the Atma. Samstam means standing or situated. Atma is the soul. Or it means oneself. So Atma Samstam, we're translating as present in the soul, in the jiva soul, in his heart. But we can also, there's also a second interpretation that's given. It can mean that he's situated in himself, or his foundation than himself, he's his own foundation. Meaning he's not dependent on anybody else, and he has no other cause beyond him. This is all that one needs to know. And if one doesn't have this knowledge, then no matter what he does know, it will be inadequate, and he will not be successful in life. Later on in this Upanishad, there will be very strong condemnation of those who don't have knowledge of the Supreme in these three aspects. Okay. And this verse also implies our Siddhanta, our philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda. Because here, the Absolute Truth is being described as one. All that you need to know. At the same time, there's variety within that Absolute Truth. He has his energies, the living entity and the material energy. They are, at the same time, part of him, and also, they have their autonomous existence. Simultaneously one and different. Anyway, we should recognize this Prairitaram Chamatva, those words are exactly repeated from verse 6. Now we're going to move on to the next verse. Verse 13. The next verses describe how the Supreme Lord is present everywhere and at the same time individually present in everybody's heart. Which is apparently contradictory. He's everywhere, but he's localized in the heart. And something about the process of how to begin to realize him. An introduction to the sadhana of meditation. Later in the second chapter, the process of how to engage in yoga meditation is described in detail. But now we're being given an introduction to that. So verse 13. Vahner yata yogikatas yoni gatasya murtir nadrishyate naiva chalingana shoho sabuya ev indana yogi grihyaha tadvobayam vai pranavena dehe. Fire is invisible when dormant in the kindling stick, which is its source. But the signs by which its presence can be deduced do not disappear. It does become visible when one evokes it from its kindling source. Similarly, the Supreme Soul is now invisible in one's body, but by the syllable Om, his appearance can be evoked. Okay, someone may raise the doubt. It's implied here. This is answer to a doubt that someone might express. That we're saying the Super Soul should be known, and he has to be known. At the same time, we're saying that he's imperceptible. He's hidden, he can't be seen, he's hiding in the heart. So, therefore, the recommendation that one should know him is not a practical one, it can't be implemented. How can you know what's not perceivable? So the answer is given here that although in our present condition, we cannot perceive this Lord. He's invisible to us. His presence can be evoked. We can make him appear. Just like fire is dormant in wood. according to the metaphysics of the Vedas, fire has a subtle body, just like we have our gross and subtle body. So when it's sitting in wood, dormant, it's there in its subtle body. It's present in subtle form. Fire is there. We know that atoms of fire exist within wood. Atoms of air, water, earth are mixed up, but there are atoms of fire in there. That fire can be made to appear and manifest its qualities of heat and light when you kindle it with another fire. When sufficient heat is applied, then the fire comes out of the wood. Similarly, by sadhana, by spiritual practice, the presence of the Supersoul in the heart can be evoked by purification of the heart and by turning one's attention toward the Supreme. So here, the process of chanting Om, and this is the beginning of the ancient process of meditation, is recommended. Now this, of course, is an archaic process. It's not useful for us to follow the same process in Kali Yuga. But the basic idea, the basic principle is eternal. These Upanishads are eternal, but they have to speak in relative terms. So here it's talking about the meditation that was practiced in Satya Yuga. Hearing this Upanishad in another age, we have to extrapolate the understanding and apply it to our own circumstance. Of course, this meditation on Om is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam. In the second canto, when Shukadeva Goswami begins instructing Parikshit Maharaj what he should do to prepare himself for death, which is coming very quickly, Shukadeva tells him first, sit down in a quiet place and meditate chanting Om. So that even just before Kali Yuga, this process was also recommended. In our own circumstance, we can read about this meditation, upasana, on the syllable Om, which is called pranava. Pranava is the technical name for the syllable Om. We can translate that into our understanding of Nam Sankirtana, our own sadhana. Same principles apply. Okay, text 14. Atmanam aranim kritva panavam chotararanim dhyana nirmatana vyasad devam pasini gurava. By making oneself the lower kindling stick, Omkar the upper stick, and churning the two by meditation, one can see the effulgent Lord who is as if hiding within. This is describing how there is a process, it's practical, and it will work. One simply has to use oneself as the instrument and engage the transcendental process of chanting Om. In other words, take advantage of the spiritual sound vibration. And by the interaction of the two, the Supreme Lord will manifest, because that vibration of the transcendental sound will purify one's heart. So I said here there are two sticks, and this is in the Vedic sacrifice, this is how the sacred fire was ignited. Of course, the Vedic Brahmins are supposed to keep the fire burning perpetually in their house, those who were initiated into performing sacrifice. That fire should never go out. And the Vedic Brahmin is obliged to use that fire every day to perform sacrifices. Even here in Vrindavan, in the Radharaman temple, we saw last night, went to see, it was a disappearance day of Gopalbhatta Goswami, I think. It was, wasn't it? Okay, yesterday. Yeah. So we went to take darshan, and we saw, just before the evening arti, the pujari, someone brought the pujari from the kitchen, from the deity's kitchen, that fire that had been burning for 500 years, ever since Gopal Bhatta Goswami's time, without going out. And they lit the lamp for the arati from that fire. So like that, from generation to generation, in the Vedic Brahmins' families, the sacred fire has to be continued. But when you perform, that's for your personal sacrifices at home. But when you perform a major sacrifice, like Soma sacrifice, you have to ignite, you have to create a new fire. So the fire has to be churned from the kindling sticks, ritualistic kindling sticks. It's not just some picking any sticks, or sometimes devotees imitate this. They get some phosphorus or something and they pretend that they're making, you know. I know one devotee who does it when he does fire sacrifice. He pretends to create the fire by rubbing, but he actually puts some phosphorus between the sticks. There's a natural, specific ritualistic process for churning the fire from the kindling sticks. As described, there's one stick or actually block below, another above, and then there's a churning rod that goes between the two. I have a picture here of the Brahmins preparing to perform Soma sacrifice, and they're practicing churning the kindling sticks. You can see here, I'll pass it around. Here there are two blocks or two planks of wood, one on top of each other. You can not very well see. You can see that there are two wood boards there if you look carefully. There's a hole in both of them, and this rod goes through the hole in both, and they pull a rope, and by friction, between the two boards, the fire appears. There's also little pieces of hay or straw put inside. In the sacrifice, there are physical elements, and then they're always accompanied by mantras. It's the mantra that turns ordinary things into something magical. Without the mantra, it has no spiritual significance. They may make a fire by friction, but it won't be sacred fire if they don't chant the mantras.
Just by mantra.
No, mantra is part of the sacrifice. The mantra, but also the physical paraphernalia has to be there also. That's the difference between Vedic sacrifice, karma, and meditation. Meditation is no paraphernalia, you just sit down and think. But in the sacrifices, there's physical things to do, and physical paraphernalia. Okay, so here, in this metaphor, the Jiva is the lower stick, the lower board. The Om is the upper board. And the meditation is the churning between the two of them, the interreaction that causes the friction, that creates the spiritual fire. So what it is, it's kirtan, japa, smaranam, remembrance of the Lord, that evokes His presence. Okay, here there's a reference in the Vedanta Sutra commentary of Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan. He's commenting in chapter 3, which is the chapter on sadhana, on practice to realize the Supreme. In the second part of the third chapter, verse 26, I think we read from verse 27 yesterday, there's an objection or a doubt raised that we may say that by pure devotion to the Supreme, by devotion, one can have direct realization of Him, personal realization. But the objection is no, this argument is not solid. We can't agree with this, because we know many people who are practicing devotional service and they don't see God. So the process is not effective. Because there's so many examples of persons for whom it doesn't work. At least who don't see God personally. So the answer is given in the sutra. Vyasadeva in his sutra is answering this objection. He says, you have it here in your text, I think, at the top of page 14. Prakashascha karman abhyasat. Indeed, his manifestation comes by practice of devotional activities. So the Vedanta Sutra here is answering, saying, no, by practicing devotional service, you will see God. Baladev Vidyabhushan explains in his commentary now. In the devotional activities of worship and so on, deity worship and so on, by practice of those, which are the basis of actual meditation, actual God consciousness, the Lord does become manifest. That we see from the authoritative statements of the scripture, like Dhyana Nirmatana Abhyasad Devam Pasin Nigudavat, this verse we just read, verse 14. The Supreme does become visible when one evokes it from its kindling source. Oh, no, I'm sorry, wrong verse. By churning the two kindling sticks by meditation, one can see the effulgent Lord, who is as if hiding within. So the Baladevi Roshan says that the sutra is implying reference to this and similar statements in the Upanishads. By practice of devotional service, one acquires affection, attraction to the Lord. One becomes attracted to Him. And then, when one has developed affection, love for the Supreme Lord, then he can see Him directly. Yes, there are other statements, Baladevi Roshan says, that seem to contradict this. Like the statement, and I already have it written here also on page 14. The one second from the top. Natam arariyitvapi kaschid vyakti karishyati nitya vyakto yato deva paramatma sanatana. No one can make Him appear even by worshipping Him. After all, the Supreme Lord is the ever unmanifest eternal super soul. But Baladevi Roshan says, okay, but what this kind of verse is talking about is that if you worship the Lord and don't have love for Him, then He won't appear. If you worship, just go through the external motions of worship, you won't see Him directly. So you can worship Him for your whole lifetime and not see Him. But if you follow the process sincerely, you'll develop affection and then you will see Him. I took some of these references in the Bhagavatam, like the one that is right here, third canto, chapter 9, verse 24, from a book by Haridas Shastri, he's a scholar here in Vrindavan, who wrote a book called Vedanta Darshana, in which he simply gives a list of Bhagavatam verses. For every sutra in the Vedanta Sutra, he shows one or more verses of the Bhagavatam that comment on that Vedanta Sutra. So I looked up some of these. We just discussed one verse, one sutra. So the verse in the Bhagavatam that Haridas Shastri chose to explain, that explains that verse, that sutra, is this one here. Tadva idam bhuvana mangala mangalaya dhyanisma no darshitam ta upasakanam tasmai namo bhagavate nubidema tubhyam. Yo nadvito nadakapad bir asat prasangahi. Spoken by Lord Brahma before He created the universe. And Brahma said, this present form, or any transcendental form expanded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is equally auspicious for all the universes. Since you have manifested this eternal personal form upon which your devotees meditate, I therefore offer my respectful obeisances to you. Those who are destined to be dispatched to the path of hell neglect your personal form because of speculating on material topics, so that His devotees can meditate upon Him. And by practicing meditation with love, they can realize Him directly and become perfect. There's another verse in the Bhagavatam that closely echoes this verse 14 in the Śrīdāśatara Upanishad. That's just below. Acharyo vanir adyaksyad antivas yutaraya nihi tatsandanam pravachanam vijasandhi sukavaha. The spiritual master can be compared to the lower kindling stick, the disciple to the upper kindling stick, and the instruction given by the guru to the third stick placed in between. That's the churning rod, the third stick. The transcendental knowledge communicated from guru to disciple is compared to the fire arising from the contact of these, which burns the darkness of ignorance to ashes. bringing great happiness to both guru and... Okay. We can look at verse 15. Tileshu tailam dadaniva sarvihi apa srotats avranishu chagnihi evam atmatmani grihyate sao sachinainam tapasayo nupashyati. Like the oil within sesame seeds, the ghee within curdled milk, and the water within rivers, the Supreme Self can be found within the finite self. He can be gradually seen by practice of honesty and discipline. Okay, so metaphors, four different metaphors are given here of how the Supreme is present everywhere in everybody's heart, and how to manifest him. Oil is contained in various kinds of seeds, like sesame seeds. And by squeezing with a machine the seeds, the oil is exuded. Ghee is potentially present in milk. Of course, without some chemical transformation, it doesn't manifest. But by agitating the milk with some acetic acid or some acid, you have to use acid, or you just make its own acid, lactic acid. Yeah. Just by churning the milk, something happens chemically, and the butter is produced. Or ghee for butter, and then ghee. Purified butter is ghee. Waters and rivers, according to the second commentary, this refers to underground water. There are rivers invisible, sometimes running under the ground. And if you tunnel, dig a well down into the ground, you can get that water. It can be, although it's invisible, it can be gotten. And then also, going back to the example of fire in the kindling wood, it's dormant, but it can be manifested. Ordinary fire can be produced by heat or by friction, and the sacred fire can be produced by the sacred ritual of churning and chanting the proper mantras. So similarly, by these two specific means of satya and tapas, one can realize the Supreme Lord within his heart will become manifest. So these analogies are appropriate. When in the example of the seeds, sesame seeds, containing oil, that oil is present throughout the seed. It's not one particular part of the seed where the oil is sitting, it's pervading the seed. Similarly, Brahman pervades all existence, including the individual living entity. The same with the ghee that's dormant in milk. The ghee is dormant in all of the milk, not just part of it. So similarly, the Supreme Soul is present in every living entity's heart. There's no living entity where he's absent. So the question may be asked, which person, who, will be successful in trying to obtain the Super Soul? The answer is that sincere practitioner, sadhaka, who properly seeks after the Supreme, anupashyati. So pashyati is to look, or to see. But anupashyati means to follow the proper process, to systematically, appropriately attempt to see, to look, to seek after the truth, following the standard process. And the standard process is specified here, satya and tapas. Satya means truth, tapas means austerity or discipline. We have two different commentaries, two different explanations of what that means. Satyam can mean, according to Rangva Manuja, faith in God. Bhagavan Nishta. Trust in God. Interest in God. Fixing one's attention on God and turning one's attention away from illusion is called Bhagavan Nishta. So, and that can be called Satyam, truthfulness, because God consciousness is the essence of all truthfulness. A person who is God conscious is actually an honest person. What he says is the truth. Whereas a person who is not God conscious, even if he's externally moralistic, if he tries to be truthful, he can't. No matter what he says, it's not true. Even though he tries to be truthful. And even if a Vaishnav tries not to be truthful, whatever he says becomes true. Or you can say, satyam just means, more generally, speaking and acting on the for the benefit of every living entity. And tapas, according to Ram Ramanuja, austerity, discipline, but specifically the practice of fixing one's mind and senses on the one goal of perfection. Aiming everything you have, all your intelligence and senses and all your assets on the achievement of God consciousness. Or according to the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary, tapas, discipline, means specifically nam sankirtana. Okay, now we'll go look at what Vedanta Sutra says about there's two different sutras that refer to this verse that I found. In the first chapter of the Vedanta Sutra, which discusses, the first chapter of the Vedanta Sutra is focused on sambandha jnana, understanding the relationship between God and his energies, and showing that all the statements of the Upanishads are talking about Brahman, and not about different demigods, not about so many different topics, but that the Upanishads are all discussing the same absolute topic of Brahman, and they're not contradictory. That's the purpose of the first chapter of the Vedanta Sutra, to show the consistency of the Upanishads. So in that chapter, there's one short passage here, in Baladeva Vidyabhushan's Govinda Bhashya commentary, where he says, the jiva, his whole identity, his whole self, is totally pervaded by the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is not simply existing outside of the living soul, enveloping like some cloud or something from the outside, but he thoroughly pervades, which means the jiva doesn't have a separate existence from the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is within him and without him, all pervading. And he says this is established by various scriptural statements, various arguments presented in the Upanishads. For example, the statement Anur Aniyan Mahato Mahiyan. The Absolute Truth is smaller than the smallest. Anu means atom, smaller than the atom. Mahato Mahiyan, and larger than the greatest thing, which is the ether, the largest material existence. Larger than all skies, smaller than the atom. That is the Absolute Truth. That implies the Absolute Truth is small enough to easily enter within the spirit soul. That's also a statement from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. We'll see that later in the third chapter, that verse. And that the Supreme Lord is all-pervasive, including pervading within the living entity's own self. He also pervades the living soul. That's stated in the verse 15, quoted here. Tileshu tailam dadaniva sarpi. Just like the oil in sesame seeds, and like the ghee that is dormantly present within milk. Similarly, the Supreme Soul is pervading everything, including the Spirit Soul. That's Baladeva Vidyabhushan's reference to this verse. Again, in the Govinda Bhashya. In the third chapter, again, chapter on sadhana, on practice, in the second part, and the 28th verse, we just read the 26th, the 27th, oh, this, I'm sorry, 38th sutra, which you have, I think, here on page 15, underneath the translation. Anena sarva gatatvam ayama shabdadibhyaha. Along with this appearing in finite size, Brahman is also all-pervading, as is established by terms like pervading, ayama means pervading, and by other reasons. So in the commentary, Balaji Vidyabhushan says, the supreme truth transcends the material existence. So he's not delimited, he's not limited by any space or time, especially by any spatial considerations. He, and there are statements in scripture, in Upanishads, that say that he pervades everything, both inside and outside. Thus, it is said, Tileshu Tailam Dadadiva Sarpi. The Brahman is present, like the oil in the sesame seeds, and like the ghee in milk. Again, referring to this verse in explaining Vedanta Sutra. And then, in reference to this Vedanta Sutra, this particular sutra, Haridas Shastri picks out a verse of the Bhagavatam that he considers explaining this sutra. Two verses from the 10th canto, from Lord Brahma's Prayers, chapter 14? No, this is the chapter after that. Anyway, the verse says, Krishnam enam avehitvam atmanam akilatmanam jagadhidaya sopyatva dehivabhati mayaya. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. Vastito janadamatra krishnam stasnu charishnu cha Bhagavad Rupam Akilam Nadyad Vasviha Kinshana. Those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as he is, see all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such enlightened persons recognize no reality apart from the Supreme Lord Krishna. So again, this is again saying, in other words, that the Supreme Truth is all-pervading in all moving living beings, all non-moving living and non-living things. He's all-pervading, within and without. And as far as the second half of this verse, that one can be gradually, one can see the Supreme within his heart gradually by practice of honesty and discipline. This is also echoed in the Bhagavatam, the third canto. I think you'll find this, on the next page, second verse quoted on page 16. From the third canto. Tapasaiva param jyotir bhagavam tamaroksajam sava bhuta gahava sam anjasa vindate puman. By penance only, can one even approach the personality of Godhead, who is within the heart of every living entity, and at the same time, beyond the reach of all senses. Okay. Any questions now, before we read the last verse of the chapter? Okay, so we'll have one more verse, and then we'll have a few minutes for questions, if anybody has any. Text 16, which sums up the first chapter. Sarva vyapinam atmanam shire sarpiri varpitam atma vidyatapo mulam tad brahmo panashat param. And last translation. The all pervading supersoul is present within oneself like the ghee hidden in milk. Self realized devotional meditation and intense discipline lead one to realize Him. This is the most confidential teaching about the Supreme. This is a common thing in the Upanishads to repeat the last line at the end of not every chapter, but at particularly important points in the text. When a conclusion is being reached, then you'll have a repetition of the last line. According to Rangva Manuja, this expresses special reverence and also tells you this is the end of the chapter. So the super soul is all pervading, just like ghee is dormantly pervading milk. This indicates that the Supreme pervades all the material nature and all the elements that evolve out of her. He's not only the super soul, present in the body and senses of living entities, he's everywhere, in the physical elements also. So, Tam Brahmo Upanishad Param. This says, this is the supreme, the topmost, the best, Upanishad, which describes Brahman. Upanishad means confidential teaching. We gave it one definition, that it's describing this disciple coming and sitting reverentially in the presence of the teacher. But it also means confidential instruction. The Vedas say so many things, mostly ritualistic. But those special portions of the Vedas that teach the secret essence, the confidential truth, the philosophical essence, they're called Upanishad. And there are specific books called Upanishads, but even elsewhere in the Vedas, there are certain portions that are very philosophical, and they're called Upanishad also. Even some short passage of a few verses may be called Upanishad, because it's giving special philosophical insight. This is announcing itself. This is the best, the most confidential instruction about the Absolute Truth. So we already were discussing in the previous verse the two means of satya and tapas, truthfulness, honesty, and discipline for realizing and seeing the Absolute Truth. One may ask, though, how can you achieve, how can you achieve these two qualities of truthfulness and discipline? So the answer is Atmavidya Tapomula, given in this verse, third line. Atmavidya, knowledge of the self. Or vidya can also mean meditation, so meditation on the self. Or science, philosophical knowledge of the self. And discipline, by practice and knowledge of the self. According to Ramanujan, this means knowledge of the self and acting according to the regulative principles. By that, by Atmavidya and tapas, one will be qualified to directly engage in transcendental practice of sadhana. According to the other commentary, the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary, Atmavidya means knowledge of God, Bhagavad Gyana. And tapas means Hari Bhajan, engaging in worshipping Lord Hari directly. In either case, proper practice, spiritual process leads to one becoming qualified to see the Supreme. As Krishna says in the Gita, the Dami Buddhi Yogam Damiena Mahabhupayanti Te. To those, Tesham Satati Yuktanam Bhajatam Piti Purvakam. Those who are constantly engaged in practicing my devotional service and do so with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. The last line, Tan Pramano Upanishad Param, can be explained another way. One way is to say that it means this is the most confidential instruction about Brahman. Another way to read it is that Absolute Truth is Brahmo, is Upanishad Param. That Brahman, Absolute Truth, is Upanishad Param, which means he is known through the Upanishads. If you want to know God, you have to learn about him philosophically. Religion without philosophy is fanaticism. So whether you read Upanishads or Bhagavad Gita, one way or another, you have to study the science of God. And that's stated elsewhere in the Upanishads, like we heard Aranyaka Upanishad. Tat tu Upanishadam Purusham Pachami. I am inquiring about that Absolute Truth, the Lord who is known through the Upanishads. Okay. That is the first chapter. Any questions, comments? That's following the commentary by the Gaudiya Mutt Pandit, Nitya Gopal Panchatirtha. So he chose to explain that devotional meditation. Yeah. He Rang Ramanuja on one hand, the older commentary said that Atmavidya means knowledge of the self, of the soul. Whereas the Gaudiya commentary written in the last 30 years, he chooses to say that Atmavidya means Bhagavad Jnana, knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Okay, so I translated that as devotional meditation. You can argue that no, if you follow the strict dictionary meaning of the words Atma and Vidya, you know, it doesn't have to mean devotional. Of course, Vidya, although in the dictionary it means knowledge, first of all, but we have to understand the context. In the Upanishads, Vidya always means upasana, the process of meditation, which is basically a process of bhakti yoga. Upasana is also translated as worship, because in Satya Yuga, this was the method of Krishna conscious worship, meditating. So the word vidya, the Upanishads present different vidyas. It's not just theoretical knowledge, it's meditation, devotional meditation on the Supreme. That's what vidya means, generally in the Upanishads. Although it may be presented in an impersonal way, it's actually a process of worship by meditation. You know, it's yoga, the process of uniting oneself with the Supreme by that mental exercise. So that's devotional. Whether you don't know the name of God, you don't know what he looks like, but still, by following the Upanishadic vidyas, you're practicing devotional meditation. And if you do it properly, with the proper guidance, if you learn the Upanishads from a Vaishnava and not from a Mayavadi, then by studying and practicing these different meditations, you'll graduate to pure devotional service. Okay. Maybe in the previous age at least. Maybe not in Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga the process doesn't work anymore. Yes. I'm sorry? Oh, tapas. Yeah, sure. The Rang Ramanuja's commentary written in the 17th century, the Sri Sampradaya, he says that tapas means sadhu karma. Pious works according to the injunctions of the scriptures. A brahminical behavior. And the Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary says Hari Bhajana, worshipping Lord Hari. I translated tapas as discipline. That was my general translation. Anything else? Yes, or in general, what has been discussed in this chapter. This is it. This is the most essential teaching. Yes. Yeah, the basic theme is knowledge of the Deva, Supreme Lord. That word is used over and over again, Deva, the effulgent Lord. Personal realization. That knowledge leads to realization, to liberation. That's the basic theme of the whole Upanishad. Not only that. What has been discussed in this chapter is how he's the controller of the jiva of nature, of the jiva and nature. He's the supreme controller. Then it's been introduced toward the end of the chapter how he's the super soul in the heart. That's second. Later in the Upanishad will be described how he's the creator of the world. So he's the creator, the maintainer, the inspirer, he gives life to all. These are different features of the Supreme Person. In general, we can call this the super soul realization, how God is controlling all his energies. Now, it's not his intimate pastimes with his devotees. It's his pastimes with the material world. So what's missing here is the pure devotion. We're just focusing on God in his relationship with the material world and the living entities who are stuck in the material world. We're not gaining any insight into Krishna's relationship with his liberated devotees, with the pure devotees. Well, not his Vaikuntha opulence, with his material world opulences. The creator, the controller, and the super soul in everybody's heart. In the material world. So it's a kind of devotion. I would characterize this as Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Yes, but it's not a pure awe and reverence like there is in Vaikuntha. It's a conditional awe and reverence. This is a selfish, self-centered viewpoint of those who think the material world is so important. That the most important thing God has done is created the world for us. Yeah. The fact that he has his own world, that we don't even care about. What we care about is he gives us our daily bread, and therefore we glorify him for that. Yeah. But that's the least glorious thing that God does, is create the material world. His other activities are much more attractive and much more glorious. It's like the government builds a prison house and takes care of a few 10,000 prisoners. That's not the extent of the glory of the government, that it takes care of the prisoners. But for the prisoners, that's important. What kind of meal they're getting in the prison. So that's their way of meditating on the glory of the government. So it's one way. This is a process of coming to God consciousness, but it's not the supreme process. It's not pure. It's Jnana Mishra Bhakti. It's devotional service, but motivated with the desire for liberation. It's the devotional service of someone who's a prisoner in the material world and wants to get free from it, and that's his desire. It's not based on pure desire, so the process is not completely pure. But it's bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Yes, there's fear, and that's why when this finally gets to some personal description, when God is named, he's named Rudra. And his prayer is, please don't destroy me. Now, the attitude is one of fear. That shows up later on in the third and fourth chapter. Okay?